And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Biddle with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll take your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. So the season is officially over, and the New England Patriots were victorious over the Atlanta Falcons 34-28 in overtime. First Super Bowl ever that went to the extra session, and an epic comeback in which the Patriots overcame a 25-point deficit. So much to delve into. I don't even know where do we begin. Again, Paul, but clearly, you know, the Falcons had the Patriots with their backs against the wall. Their offense had done enough in the first half. They got a defensive touchdown, a pick six off of Tom Brady. But, you know, everybody wants to point the finger at, well, how could Atlanta blow a lead like this? And I think that you can really spread the wealth of the blame. You can look at clearly the offense not executing when they needed it most in terms of down the stretch, milking the clock, forcing New England to use its timeouts, getting in field goal range. And then also an Atlanta defense that kept Brady and company in check for the most part, but then allows New England to put together two drives for touchdowns on each of their final two possessions. One was for 10 plays over 90 yards, a touchdown. They allowed the two-point conversion, and then an OT, 8 plays over 70 yards, the game-winning score. The defense certainly deserves responsibility as well.
You know, Lance, this is why the NFL is the greatest game in all of humanity. It really is. Because it's a spider web. It's a domino effect. It's peeling back many layers of the onion. There is never just one thing that happens in a football game that doesn't affect multiple other things, which then causes the avalanche that results in whatever it is that happens. I believe the Falcons did a poor coaching job. I believe the Falcons players did a poor job of execution. And you know what? Let's throw in another little thing into that equation. How about Lady Luck with Edelman?
You know, that's how making, the ball bounces sometimes.
Making a Tyree type grab.
Yeah.
You throw all of those things in together and you get the Falcons blowing it.
No, you're 100% right. And I think that you could bring it back to the Giants by using that Edelman catch to just show you that in just about every Super Bowl, you have some of those plays where the ball just happens to bounce your way. And you're right, it does involve luck if that's how you want to word it, or it just involves in going above the X's and O's and making a miraculous type of play.
And here's the thing. If any one of those three things don't happen, whether it's luck or bad execution by the Falcons players, which of course goes hand in hand with good execution by the Patriots players, but let's just say luck, execution, coaching. All three of those things have to be aligned, kind of like the moon and the sun in an eclipse when you can't see any of it at all and it blocks it all out. It's got to be perfectly aligned. It really does. For the results to happen the way that they do. Same thing happened when the Giants beat the Bills in Super Bowl 25. A huge array of events happened. Giants win. Same thing happened when they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl twice. Certain events happened. Boom. Giants win. It's always a combination of coaching, execution, or lack thereof, and a little bit of luck sprinkled in. Kind of like the oregano on the pizza.
There we go. Got to get that Italian food analogy. BBKL's not the same without it.
And so, again, that's why I love the game so much. Because you can't isolate just one thing.
Well, let's focus on a few possessions here, Paul. And one of the ones that I want to go back to is the fact that Atlanta had an opportunity in field goal range. They're at the New England 22. It's an 8-point game, 28-20. And everybody's saying to themselves, all right, hey, Atlanta can sit pretty here, get Matt Bryant out on the field. You go up by 11. New England still has two timeouts, but you're feeling comfortable. And this is where all of a sudden the wheels on the bus started to fall off for the New England Patriots. They ran the ball on that first down. Devontae Freeman lost a yard, so it becomes second and 11. And there's just under 4 minutes left in the game, and a lot of people are saying to themselves, all right, still run the football, run the clock, force New England to at least utilize a timeout. Instead, they dial up a pass play, and Matt Ryan gets sacked. And he was still in the pocket when he was taken down.
Wait a second. You're jumping far ahead. I think you want to talk about where it really started? It starts on the third and one when they send Matt Ryan back to throw.
When Dante Hightower has the sack, yeah.
Loses the ball on a fumble when on that third and one, right then and there, to me, that's truly where Niagara Falls started to open up. Because at that point, it is a full, look at the lead. Look at that lead.
A very sizable lead, yeah. And you held New England to a field goal on the previous possession.
Correct.
When they were knocking the door down in the red zone.
Stunted the Patriots' momentum.
Yeah.
And what did you do on third and one? When, by the way, you're supposed to have a power running game at your disposal, one that ran well during the entire first half. And what do you do on third and one? Lessons learned, my friends. You get away from the power running game. You send your quarterback back to throw. Bad coaching decision. Okay, number one, bad execution because they failed to pick up the loose guy coming
Devontae
off the edge.
Devontae Freeman was there, and he was there, Paul. He was there.
What's he doing?
Hightower just literally went right around him, and Freeman
Let
said, come on down.
Let him go. Yeah. Monty Hall, come on down. You got it. Or Price is Right, right? Bob Barker. Come on down.
There you go. Price is Right.
Horrible coaching in that spot. Horrible execution in that spot. And then, of course, the luck factor is the ball gets stripped, and the Patriots wind up getting lucky bounce where they recover it. To me, that's where the Avalanche really started.
I agree with you. It's a huge turning point. But, Paul, if you even want to go deeper, I'd take it a step further back. After the Patriots score their first touchdown of the game to make it 28-9, Gostkowski misses the extra point. Right. Bill Belichick, and I was very surprised, late in the third quarter he decides to go for the onside kick.
Right.
So Atlanta has great field position here. Now you have an opportunity to even add more points. You take over at the New England 41. What happens? Sacks, holding penalties. They take themselves even further out of another opportunity to get a field goal. I mean, that's a turning point right there. Maybe it's 31-3 now, or 31-9, excuse me.
There are so many.
Yeah.
Again, that's why it's a great game. But here, let me just say one other thing about, you know, how Lady Luck gets involved sometimes. You know, the bounces of the ball, the deflected balls, the passes that were dropped. Let's not forget one thing. I thought that the Patriots had six catchable balls in this game that they did not haul in. Whether or not you thought they were just clean drops or that they were difficult catches that might have been possible, argue that all you like. I do think that there were six catchable passes that they could have made throughout the course of the first three quarters that would have gotten them a lot closer than the hole they were trying to dig themselves out of. And that is a matter of poor execution by the Patriots and some luck also. But they shouldn't have been down as far as they were.
I completely agree with you. There was a possession, Paul, when Chris Hogan and Julian Edelman dropped passes on consecutive plays.
Yes.
And I agree with you. Not to take anything away from the Atlanta defense, but it wasn't Atlanta's defense flustering those wide receivers to force them to drop those passes.
Brady put some nice throws out there for them.
He did indeed. So it was an uncharacteristic first half for the New England Patriots, specifically in terms of the mental mistakes that were plaguing them that we're just not used to seeing, whether it be in the postseason or the regular season. This team finds a way to overcome those mental mistakes, but they were absolutely plagued by them all in the first half.
So one of the many lessons learned out of this, and I think there are many we can go through the course of the show, but we could talk about power running game being necessary. The Falcons did not use it to their advantage in the second half, and it cost them. We talk about how the game is won and lost in the trenches. Well, guess what? The Patriots dominated the trenches during their comeback. Absolutely, positively, football 101. You can't get any simpler than that. The game is won in the trenches. You talk about coaching decisions when you don't manage the time correctly and when you don't put your players in the best position to win. Guess what? It costs you more often than it does not. We talk about execution, how the Patriots could not hold on to the football earlier in the game. But then all of a sudden they were doing it, and what happened? They started their comeback. So many different things we can talk about, lessons learned in this game. The fullback usage by the Falcons in their power running game early in the game was terrific.
Yeah, that was a point where Atlanta was averaging about 9 yards per carry the first half, Paul.
Power running game, folks. And let me give you one more. You don't think that Shane Vereen was a big loss to the Giants this year? Think about it. In the Seattle Super Bowl a couple of years ago, Vereen caught 11 passes.
Heavily involved.
And was a big part of why the Patriots were even in that game. Never mind that they won it on a pick. But he was a big reason why they were in that game. What happened yesterday? James White, their new Shane Vereen.
The replacement, essentially.
Three touchdowns, Super Bowl record, 14 catches, and was a huge reason as to why they won the game. That role, that guy, that scat back coming out of the backfield, especially in today's game, is huge. All lessons that you could take from this Super Bowl.
No, I think those are very valid points that you brought up, Paul, and it's interesting because you brought up James White, and if you look at the trend over the course of this postseason, and New England's done this even in previous seasons, every single game they highlight a different player. And you know what it's about, Paul? And I think there's another lesson. It's about matchups. They always look to how they can maximize the value of their roster based on what Atlanta's defense showcases.
One of my favorite phrases, Lance, it's not about who has the better roster. It's what does the matchup show you going in? And I didn't like the matchup from the Falcons' angle going in. I had 31-23 New England. Didn't think it would come down to overtime. Certainly didn't think the Falcons would dominate the game for three quarters. I'm not going to lie to you about that. But ultimately, what happened? The matchups were key in the fourth period when the Patriots were able to take advantage of them.
You also brought up the trenches, and if you were to watch about three quarters of this game, you would say Atlanta absolutely dominated the trenches. They were getting to Brady constantly. It reminded me, Paul, of the AFC Championship game last year. Remember what Denver did to that New England offensive line, and Brady was on his back? But you're right, the script was flipped by New England's pass rush in the second half. And what's amazing is, you look at the numbers, both teams finished with five sacks. If you watch this game, you may have not thought that, but New England got to Matt Ryan five times, a few more hits as well, and that's what changed the course of this game. They also were opportunistic. Hightower forced Matt Ryan to cough up the football, but that pressure package late where Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator, they were able to get a little bit more aggressive, and obviously they were in desperation mode. That was big. It was a big swing of momentum for New England in this game.
Eight quarterback hits by the Falcons, 12 quarterback hits by the Patriots. Folks, please, please, if you've ever doubted it, please adopt a new philosophy. The game is won in the trenches. So many people still don't get that. They think it's the skill position guys because you're all poisoned by fantasy football and by video games. The game is always going to be decided in the trenches.
Big lesson, not just from this game, but I would say throughout the course of the playoffs. The teams that can protect their quarterback and the teams that could get to the quarterback, in all likelihood, are the teams that are going to get the furthest into the postseason. And while Atlanta had some offensive line issues and their starting center was playing with a broken left fibula, that was Alex Mack, a big reason, Paul, and I said this a few weeks ago, why Atlanta even positioned itself to get to the Super Bowl. People are going to throw out Matt Ryan, MVP, tremendous run for their offense, number one scoring offense. It was them going out, getting Alex Mack, and shoring up an issue that held Atlanta back over the last few seasons. There were seasons where Matt Ryan was around, Julio Jones was around, Roddy White was around, Freeman was around. It wasn't as if Atlanta brought in all this personnel overnight, but what held the team back?
Offensive line.
There you go.
Hey, in the last 10 years, they've had some pretty good running backs, too.
Michael Turner.
And, you know, ultimately, it wasn't until they got Jake Matthews that that offensive line truly started to turn around.
Absolutely.
That's what happens when you get a franchise lineman.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter.
I love this. Young guy adopted old school philosophy.
Well, wait a minute. I've been hanging around you long enough. This is not necessarily anything new for me.
Do you know I had Schmelk actually buying in the other day at the end of the week, last week, he and I did a show.
He saw the light finally,
and he was talking about a power running game in the trenches. And I told him on the air, I was so proud of him. He finally got it. Old school is best. It will always be best.
Well, this is what happens when we hang around you a little too much.
God bless you guys.
Off. Yes, exactly. But I've been a believer a little bit longer. I think you got to give me credit there. John Navy is late arriving.
That's true. That's
I think
true.
I've been on the bandwagon a little bit longer. We're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to get to your tweets. One other thing that I do want to touch on, Paul, not necessarily related to the Super Bowl, but related to the Giants, I think it's important to note, Eli Manning, co-winner of the Walter Payton Award.
Outstanding
with
job.
Larry Fitzgerald.
Tackle Kids Cancer. He does that in conjunction with Hackensack University Medical Center. And if I haven't said it before on the show, it's worth noting because Eli Manning is so giving. And when you consider he truly is a superstar in New York and the demands on his time, aside from the fact that he lives and breathes that playbook 25 hours a day, somehow he's able to carve out time, especially for ill children. And I can't say enough about what he does for them. And folks, if you've ever seen Eli Manning here at the facility on a daily basis at practice, and the Giants are good enough to open the doors, and many a sick families or children have been afforded the opportunity to come here and visit. And who is the guy, without any question, who goes out of his way every single time to take pictures with those people, to sign autographs for them, to sit and chat with them, to make sure that they got something for lunch, did you have any dessert, did you have a little cake and cookies, how's it going? Every single time, Eli Manning will go out of his way to put smiles on those people's faces. I've been saying this for years. I've seen it on a regular basis. And boy, when you talk about somebody who gets it right, for all the bad stuff that we hear about players in the National Football League, this is a guy who gets it right, and I could not be happier for him to have been recognized publicly now for all the stuff that he does behind the curtain here that nobody outside this facility sees.
Yeah, and he doesn't do it for attention.
He does not.
And I would say the same thing with a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, who was the co-winner.
No question.
He's another
and
one.
Greg Olsen, too.
Greg Olsen,
finalists.
Too. And by the way, I'm glad you brought him up because, you know, it's unfortunate that somebody could not share in the trophy. They couldn't give it to all three. But if you saw Olsen's story and what he's had to deal with his family and his children and the charity that they started, I mean, hats off to him as well. What they do outside of the football game and how much they dedicate themselves to helping causes that help other people. You know, these are the stories, you're right, Paul, that unfortunately during the course of the NFL season we don't hear enough about because we hear a lot about the drama and whether or not the league should punish players accordingly and so forth. But there's a lot of players that are actually following the rules and going about their business, and they just don't get notoriety for it.
Good stuff.
So kudos and hats off to Eli Manning. Congratulations to him after being a finalist last season, now being a co-winner with Larry Fitzgerald. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We will monitor your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. We are unfortunately having some technical difficulties with the Giants mobile app. So if you are trying to watch through that, once again, it's not currently up and working, but you can still watch us here on Giants.com, and hopefully the website is acting accordingly.
We should also mention that Landon Collins finished third in the Defensive Player of the Year balloting behind Khalil Mack of the Raiders, and I certainly understood that. And I believe that Bronco dude was second, wasn't he?
Yes, I believe Von Miller was second. Correct,
he's pretty good.
Yeah,
he's
and he got good. A number of votes, too, by the way. Von Miller was pretty close to Khalil Mack on that. That was not a lopsided vote.
Well, Von Miller's been doing this now, for a couple of years. I mean, he's certainly got a lot to put on the shelf. But good for Collins, finished third in the balloting. And then the play of the year, Landon Collins, I thought, got ripped off.
The Mike Evans play.
They gave it to Mike Evans, a one-handed stab by the Buccaneer receiver against the sidelines. You know, I got to be honest with you. We see a one-handed stab almost every week by an NFL player now. Beckham kind of made it fashionable, but between him and Jarvis Landry and a bunch of other guys, including Antonio Brown, and I guess, what's his name? A.J. Green has done it too. It's almost routine now. Every week, somebody in the NFL makes a one-handed
Correct. It's
stab.
It's not unique anymore.
So how in the world does Evans get it for that? Heck, I've seen Beckham make 20 of those catches. During the course of the last two seasons. And he got the player of the year ahead of the pick six against the Rams in London, where Landon Collins traveled, according to ESPN Sports Science, 98 yards for that touchdown. By far the greatest play of the NFL season, not to mention it turned the Giants season
around.
Well,
I was going to say, that's what I thought you'd start with. It's the turning point of the Giants season, by far. I mean, think about it. They win that game, and then they don't look back. Turning point to the defense, turning point to the season, no doubt. And I've actually just brought up the vote. Von Miller had 17 votes, Khalil Mack 18.
Yeah.
That's how close it was. I mean, it was neck and neck. Landon Collins finished third. He had 9. Speaking of the voting, I don't know if you saw some of the other voting, but there were two things that surprised me. First of all, Matt Ryan was very deserving of MVP, and Jason Garrett was deserving of Coach of the Year. I'm not arguing that, but the rest of the voting, one thing was, I don't understand how Ben McAdoo wasn't at least a nominee. That I don't understand.
Agreed.
How does he not at least just get some consideration for the award?
And quite frankly, you also could have made a case for Belichick out of Coach of the Year, too.
You could. Well, the other guy that I was going to bring up, what about Adam Gase? Adam Gase only got 6 votes, Paul. First-year head coach like McAdoo, he turns things around after a 1-4 start. They win 9 of their last 11, and they make the playoffs. I thought he should have gotten a little bit more consideration. And then the other one that was mind-boggling, Aaron Rodgers gets 2 votes
right
for MVP. 2. 18 touchdowns, no interceptions in the final 7 games, Paul.
Yeah.
And they run the table and win 6 games.
Pretty wild.
I mean, once again, I know we're really breaking it down and we're putting it under the magnifying glass. And once again, it's not to take anything away from the winners, but just how the voting broke down. Scratch your head over some of these things.
Well, to be honest with you, you know, I looked at some of the guys who won, and I was like, you know what? There were probably some debates in terms of the guys who won themselves. But then you're talking about going deeper into the voting and wondering how guys weren't even recognized at all.
Yeah.
And I get that. And I get that. I will say this, though. You know, the one thing about this season, aside from some of the TMZ stories, which, you know, I can't stand anyway when they're off the field. I don't like those
That's
stories.
Not old school enough for you. That's
no,
the problem. So.
No. Well, you know, social media. Love it.
Yes.
Yeah, really. The one thing I will say about this season is that it truly offered us a wide variety of themes and stories between the Brady suspension, Derek Carr and Khalil Mack helping raise the Raiders from the dead, the Dolphins you're talking about also coming back out of nowhere, the first-year coaches in particular,
yeah.
You talk about him and, of course, McAdoo, bringing the Giants back out of nowhere, the whole Ezekiel Elliott, Dak Prescott storyline.
Pair of rookies doing that, yeah.
Brought the Cowboys from what they thought was oblivion into a position to possibly win. Ryan and Rodgers having two of the greatest half seasons that I think quarterbacks have ever had down the stretch to lead their teams into the postseason. So many incredible storylines, I think, in this NFL season. It was on the field. It was incredibly entertaining and fun, I thought. More so than in recent years.
Well, and it's one of your favorite terms, and I use it a lot, too. The parody of the NFL, Paul. Nothing
well, now,
beats it.
Now, I don't like
Well,
the
I know you don't
parody.
Love it. You use the term. You may not be a fan of it. I'm
I
a fan of it, though.
I can't stand the quicksand of parody, but what I am saying is there were a number of storylines that aren't necessarily related to the quicksand of parody. Storylines about specific players and coaches and people and their performances that truly left a mark on the 2016 season.
Well, the reason I brought up the term parity is because also if you look at how much the division sometimes can change from one year to another, I think it's important to note, and I'll bring it home towards the Giants, notice how the trend continued this year where the NFC East continues to have a new division winner every single year since the Eagles won 4 in a row in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
That trend continue, and that's another example of how things can be high one season, all of a sudden move down, and so forth. Or even within the sense of a season, you could start off hot and then all of a sudden fade, or fade early and then pick up steam, like the Green Bay Packers, for example, how they got off to a slow start and then all of a sudden surge late in the season. So, I mean, that to me makes the sport exciting, unlike any other sport where once you're in a hole, it's very difficult to work yourself out of those issues. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We are happy to report the app is up and working, so that is a positive, and we will continue to take your phone calls and tweets here. Let's open up the phone lines. I know a lot of people have been waiting to chat. Ken is in Trenton. He gets us going on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff
Paul.
Live. What's happening, Ken?
Hey, Paul. Hey, Lance. How you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Ken. What do you got for us?
What a game last night. My God. If there wasn't a question if Tom Brady is the best quarterback in the history of the NFL, I think now we can say it. I think now we can actually say it that Tom Brady is the best quarterback in the history of the NFL. And I'm a diehard Giants fan, so I was rooting for them because I want to be their only blemish.
You know what? I've been saying for a long, long time that Johnny Unitas is the man. Again, so far ahead of his time. What he was doing back in the 50s and 60s, it just was unthinkable the way that he was a brainiac at the position when people weren't really supposed to be. And to me, that really raised him to a whole nother level besides his physical tools, because he could make all the throws as well. But you talk about the ultimate field general, it was Johnny U. I got to say, I tip my cap to Tom Brady, because right now, I can't take it away from him. Johnny Unitas, I respect him to the ultimate degree, but I think Tom Brady's the greatest of all time.
Well, 7 Super Bowl appearances, 5 victories. You know, show me somebody that tops that. The only guy that I feel is going to get overlooked, and I'm not so quick to dismiss him, Joe Montana, 4 Super Bowl appearances, 4 victories. Now, I know perfection is very difficult to achieve, you know, similar to Michael Jordan, but when you go 4 for 4, I think that says something about you. Now, it's a team sport. Unlike the NBA, where one guy plays on both sides, Joe Montana can only dictate offense, Brady can only dictate offense, but perfection is something to at least note and be admired for.
Well, you know what's funny? If you're going to go with that line of thinking, why is it that Terry Bradshaw's never talked about among the greatest quarterbacks of all time?
And he also has 4 Super Bowl rings. That's fair.
Anyway, go ahead.
Also, I wanted to talk about the awards. I think Landon Collins had a way better year than Khalil Mack. I think the Raiders defense was giving up like 28 points a game at one point.
Yeah, Ken, I don't mean to cut you off. The way that I would look at that is, and I know it's not the most valuable defensive player, but if you take Mack out of the equation for the Raiders, look at what happens to that Oakland defense. Plus, he went 8 straight weeks with at least 1 sack. Those things should not be overlooked. And it's not to take anything away from Landon Collins, but I would say what Landon Collins was surrounded with compared to Khalil Mack, it's night and day. It's not even close.
It was a much better Giants defensive unit than what the Raiders put on the field.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I don't know how common it is, but I was really rooting for Eli Manning to get the Walton Payton Man of the Year Award. And when I seen he was a co-winner, I'm like, well, that's typical Manning fashion. They can't give him complete credit for anything. You know, just like the 2 Patriots Super Bowls was a fluke. Nothing against, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, but I think if you were Greg Olson, you'd be pretty ticked off if you were in top 3 and 2 out of 3 got a trophy.
Well, that's why I brought that up, yeah. Why it's important to at least note the type of work that he's done, even though he doesn't have the award to go with it.
You know, in a way, I almost think that they shouldn't give out one award on that one. They should just say, look, these 3 guys all get it. Just name 3 guys
and
say, look,
fair.
There are so many guys in the NFL, and so many of them do great things. If there's a group of 2, 3, 4, even 5 guys, and just say, look, these guys represent the NFL as well as you possibly could in the community, why not just do that? Why do you have to have one?
No, that's fair. You highlight 2 or 3 guys every year that you want to bring attention to for their charity work.
How about that?
As opposed to an award. I would agree with you. I think that would work
well. You're right, because it really seems to rot for Greg Olson. That's a horrible taste for him to have to go through.
Yeah.
And I'm also, just one more quick thing, guys. I'll get off the air. I heard Janoris Jenkins wants to keep the defense together. That's a couple of guys that I've heard now. Snacks Harrison also wants to keep the defense together. I think that's going to play a huge role in free agency, getting JPP back and Hankins. I really hope that happens, even though the offensive line needs work. I think this defensive unit is too good to let anything walk. That's all I got, guys. Thanks.
All right, Ken. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. I don't think it's unusual to hear players, especially coming off such a solid defensive performance, that they want to keep the nucleus together. But as much as these players are passionate about, Paul, and I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, it's just the business of the NFL, finances sometimes complicate those matters. And in an ideal world, I think any front office wants to keep a dynamic defense together, but sometimes those things are out of your control based on how finances play out and how the market plays out.
Well, let's face it, the Giants put a heavy emphasis on improving the defense during the last offseason. Now it's time to balance it out. Now they're going to have to do a few things to get that offense up to speed. And you know, folks, that's exactly the key word here, balance. You can't just have a one-sided team and think that that's going to do it. In rare cases, it has. Remember the Baltimore Ravens of the 2000 season. Although, let's not forget, Jamal Lewis was in that backfield. He wasn't exactly chopped liver.
Wasn't too shabby.
Nor was Shannon Sharp at tight end. So,
but that's another lesson that we didn't necessarily bring up earlier when we were talking about what you could take away from the Super Bowl. Atlanta, New England. What's the common trait here? Balance. Like you said, you had... This is what people forget. Atlanta was the number 1 scoring offense. New England was number 3. New England was the number one scoring defense. Now, Atlanta was low in that regard, but Atlanta's defense, notice, picked up some steam late in the regular season into the playoffs. They were a different defense if you look at how the young guys came together, because it's a very young, inexperienced defense overall. You had about four rookies starting on that defense, so you can't overlook that. They're still growing that deep, but they were able to put points on the board. That's what Atlanta and New England could do, and that's where the Giants want to get to, where, okay, we've got the defense that can make stops. We came a long way. We revamped that, but now we want to be that offense where it's not necessarily a guessing game how many points we're going to put up every week. That's what they need to get over as they move forward to the 2017 season. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Andrew is in New Jersey. Andrew, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, guys, I'll let you know who is the best quarterback in a moment. It's not Tom Brady. He's definitely right up there, though. But the Falcons lost. It's Trump's fault. He threatened to deport them at halftime if they don't throw the game. And
alrighty,
didn't work. But
yes,
that joke. But what about this one? The you never really see it on the Patriots. It's a Jewish guy is the starting wide receiver, and the black guy is the four-string wide receiver. They have a Jewish
fan.
Andrew,
you want to talk Giants, go ahead, but your Super Bowl humor is not working.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Grandpa's old cough medicine is still hasn't worn off from last night, apparently, Andrew. What do you have at least football-related here? How about that?
I say that Aaron Rodgers is better because of his physical abilities, and he's great in the pocket. Also, John Elway, was better, and Steve Young was probably better. And if you go back, like you were saying, the guys in the past, who I didn't see the guy that you were talking about.
Johnny Unitas, as he mentioned. Well, what you're basing it on is you're going based on your eye test and the physical attributes of the quarterback, but I think what Paul and I were pointing out is if you're going based on resume and you're looking at the accomplishments of an individual quarterback in NFL history, nobody has more rings than Tom Brady. Nobody has equal rings to Tom Brady. Nobody has equal appearances to Tom Brady. So from a numbers standpoint, it's very hard to sit here and make an argument that anybody's better from a resume standpoint than Tom Brady. If you're going to sit here and talk about Aaron Rodgers running out of the pocket, mobility, I think that's a different conversation with respect to that.
Right. I would just term it as, I think Aaron Rodgers is a better player, and they both play quarterback, and I would rather have him as my quarterback.
All right, you know, we'll make it simple. You know, guys like Dan Fouts and Dan Marino were better passers. I don't think there's any question about that. In terms of just being able to drop back and fire the ball, they were better passers. Mm-hmm. But this is why some years ago when John Madden said he wanted to put together the most elite quarterback you could have. And he started taking bits and pieces from every guy. Do you remember that? They did a graphic on the
Randall
TV.
Cunningham's legs.
Right. There was like Cunningham's legs. There was like Culpepper's size. You know, there was
Montana's brain.
It was Montana's elusiveness, I think. And he started putting pieces together, and he had the perfect quarterback, which basically was a Franken quarterback, if I could make a term. Okay.
Fair.
That's what you're talking about. You want to put together a Franken quarterback, you go right in it and do that. But Tom Brady's the best of all time because of the results. And that's just all there is to it.
What about John Elway? And also, it works both ways. Like, I know the Tyree catch helped the Giants win, where the Patriots would have probably went undefeated. But also, Seattle and yesterday, Atlanta, I don't take anything. Brady, they were awesome in the end, but Seattle was dumb, and they helped the Patriots win with their play calling at the end.
They did. There's two ways to look at that. You could certainly say the play calling, if Marshawn Lynch runs the ball, maybe they win. But I also am not going to take anything away from the job that Brandon Browner and Malcolm Butler did to make a sensational defensive play. I can't overlook that. And who's to say that Marshawn Lynch gets in? You know, maybe they make another good defensive stop. I think you could certainly look at a lot of plays like that, but that to me is not doing justice to the play that Browner made in terms of being physical to not allow the crossing route to be run to perfection, and Butler anticipating the play because they had studied it during practice earlier in the week and finally executing it. So, once again, I mean, it's a fair point, but I don't think then that's actually respecting the type of defensive effort that New England put into that play.
Andrew, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you
again
soon.
Thanks so much for weighing in.
I wanted to ask you one thing that was totally non-related to the game, which, of course, is not usually like me.
Uh-oh.
Lady Gaga was pretty good.
Yes, yeah. Thought she put together a very nice performance. Well, I didn't think that, of all things, you were going to bring that up. I'm very pleasantly surprised by this.
I had to
say. And I didn't even know if you were going to hang around to watch it. I thought maybe that would be an opportunity for you to breathe, put the notepad down.
Well, let's make no mistake about it. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band performed the greatest halftime show in Super Bowl history. In fact,
as if anybody had a chance.
No.
In
no,
your
they
mind
don't.
To beat it.
No, they don't. Bruce,
that's what
Bruce,
I thought.
Bruce
yes.
and company, those guys are number one, and then there's everybody else after that. But Gaga did a really good job.
Yes.
That was a lot of fun.
Absolutely, yeah. And she, you know, well, she's extremely versatile as a performer, which I think was well demonstrated.
High
in that
energy.
Showcase. Yes, high energy.
Love it.
Yes, played the piano, played a little bit of everything.
She was very good. She was
of course,
good.
Yes. And then how about...
Diving out of the
Well, that's
ceiling?
What I thought you were going to start.
Holy
no, no.
smokes.
Well, I stand corrected. I didn't think you were going to start off with that. I thought, of all things you'd commend her for, she drops the mic and then catches the football. I mean, she's got better hands than half of the NFL fan base and players. How about that? That's where I thought you were going to start.
Well, and upon video review, it was a catch.
That's what I'm going to say. Now, I don't know where she landed. I don't know where she landed.
Oh,
but
I think her feet were in bounds.
Okay, they were in bounds. Well, yeah. Wherever she did land, I think she took the Falcons' momentum with her, I was going to say.
Yes.
Not only did the length of the performance eat away at Atlanta's production, but I think wherever she took the football, clearly, they were not the same team in the second half. It reminded me of actually the Niners-Ravens Super Bowl. Remember the blackout? And
yes.
that made the second half interesting. Now, mm-hmm. I'm joking. I'm not saying that Lady Gaga is obviously responsible because of the length of the performance. But that was also where, boy, flip of the light, flip of the electricity, and things just went in a complete opposite direction in the second half. Let's head back to the phone lines. Look at you bringing up the musicians and the entertainment factor here, bringing some versatility to the program. I'm impressed. Abdul is in Brooklyn. Abdul, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Hello. Can you guys hear me?
We hear you loud and clear, Abdul.
How you doing, Lance?
Hi.
Paul?
Doing well.
You was right. You were so right about Belichick. I have to put him above Lombardi. You was absolutely right about that. Belichick, he might be the best coach of all time.
Yeah.
How many rings does he have now? Like seven? Altogether?
He's got to build a new wing onto his house to put them in the display cases. You know, the one thing that we have to remember is that the game has evolved and changed over the years. Remember, Lombardi and his Packers had the advantage of keeping that core together. And I'm a Lombardi guy. You know that. I'm a Fordham guy. I'm a Paisan.
Yeah.
I'm a Lombardi disciple. I hold Lombardi at the top of the mountain. But how do you not give it to Belichick after what he has done to establish a dynasty in these rules? Under this climate of the NFL, you can't ignore it. He's the guy now. He's the guy.
And just when you think Belichick was out, I'm like, he's getting out coached. The Patriots stormed back in the fourth quarter. That was amazing. One of the most amazing Super Bowls ever seen. But by the way, I have a question about the Giants.
Sure.
Now, Paulie, I want your insight on this. Now, I know some of the players made statements that they want to keep the defense together. But who you think is more important? Because I know the salary cap, all of that comes into place, and that might be the issue. But who you think is more significant to the defense if we used to resign one person? Will it be Jason Pierre-Paul or Jonathan Hankins? Can I take that question off the air?
Okay. All right, Abdul. Appreciate the phone call.
Thanks
so much for
chiming
in.
And I don't think my opinion is going to differ from yours. I think given the Giants' depth, and given their scheme and what they've been able to accomplish over the last season, I think Hankins is probably the more important of the two to retain.
I agree. I mean, we've had similar conversations on previous shows, and I think the only way to look at that question that Abdul posed is you then have to look at your depth chart.
You
can't just look at what Jonathan Hankins brings to the table, what JPP. You have to say to yourself, if we lose one of these guys, who is then going to step in? As the roster currently stands, of
Correct.
Course, because we have no idea what's going to happen with free agency in the draft. And when you and I have sat down and examined the roster, I think it's fair to say that you've seen a little bit more from the defensive end depth chart as opposed to the defensive tackle depth chart.
And quite frankly, I do believe it is important to look at what the Snacks-Hankins combo has
yeah.
done up the middle of that defense. Because let's face it, if the defense had not dramatically improved up the gut against the run, as good as those guys are in the secondary, and as great as it was to have OV and JPP rushing off the edge, if teams can run up the middle against you anytime they want, they're not worried about throwing the ball.
Well, that's why I said, and when we were asked this question, I remember we gave out end-of-the-season awards, and they put that up on Giants.com, and, you know, it's fun to debate that amongst fans and everybody, and people ask me, you know, who's the most valuable player on defense, and everybody jumps and says, you know, Landon Collins, and Landon Collins had a great season. I'm not taking anything away from Landon Collins statistically, the jump he made, but I think it was Damon Snacks Harrison.
I think he did for the rest of the defense. Collins, but you're right. He's right up
there. You can't overlook that. And you hit it right on the nose, Paul. Look at where the run defense went over the span of one season. Now, it's not just one guy. I mean, JPP's very good at stopping the run. Let's not forget about that. And you can't overlook that when you examine his contributions. But Snacks joining the force in the middle, being on the same page with Snacks, that is no coincidence why the run defense drastically improved and why the defense overall fed off of that, because there were two major issues for the Giants on defense in 2015. Stopping the run was one, and the other issue was not being able to get off the field on third down. Now, they had some of those issues this season, but when you stop the run, the reason why you improve on third down, Paul, is why? Because now the opposition is seeing lengthier third downs since they're not nearly as productive on first and second down. That's why the arrival of Snacks, to me, changed the entire dynamics of the defense this year.
You know, the one thing I want to make very clear as we have these conversations, and we've had them over I don't know how many weeks now, the Giants are still better off if JPP stays. Let's make that very clear, and I think you agree.
No doubt.
If they can keep him, if they can, and I hope that they can, they will be just so much better off in the 2017 season than if he walks out the door. But the question as it's posed is, where do you put the value? We think that Hankins is probably more important for all the reasons we've spelled out to retain. But I think both of us agree it'd be better off for the Giants if JPP stays too.
Well, and I'll go even further, and I agree with you. I mean, JPP, how many times have I tried to point out, and I just did a few minutes ago, how impressive he is in stopping the run. And I feel like he doesn't
Without
get much
doubt.
Notoriety for
Without
that.
Without a doubt.
Everybody looks at him as a pass rusher, but he's one of the best run stoppers at his position. But the other evidence that I think you can throw in is you have a sample size, Paul, of what this defense did with this nucleus without JPP for four games. It's a small sample size, but you at least saw, okay, defense didn't fall apart. Defense was still well-disciplined and had some big tests against prolific offenses, and they came out on top.
Packers playoff game didn't go so well.
The Packers playoff game did not, but at least the regular season, and those were games that they needed to win to solidify a playoff spot, whereas Jonathan Hankins, you don't know life without Hankins with Harrison here. We do know life without Hankins without Harrison here and how that went. So I think that is something else you need to bring into the equation when you factor in the value of these two guys.
I think the one tough thing that we really cannot evaluate is what would the loss of JPP mean to Olivier Vernon on the other side. We talked about that the other day as something that is very difficult to consider. And quite frankly, it's not just difficult. I think it's impossible to consider, because you know teams will roll protection and will do everything they can to stop OV if they know that Jason Pierre-Paul is not going to be there for a full season. That does become a little bit more of a hard question to answer, because the sample size we saw was only a month. Over a full season, can OV play 98% of the snaps and be as good as he was this year? Probably not. Not with extra attention.
Well, and that's why it's so important for, no matter if both players come back, you still want to see continued development and production from the depth chart. And I'll give you an example which I think is relevant from the Super Bowl. Look at what Atlanta's defensive line did. And we were talking a little bit about this off the air, Paul, about Vic Beasley. Vic Beasley was not a big factor. I mean, nobody really saw much of anything in the Super Bowl in the last two games. Dwight Freeney was involved, so Dwight Freeney's a name. But, you know, who did a lot of the heavy lifting? A guy named Grady Jarrett. If I asked the typical NFL fan, can you pull Grady Jarrett out of a lineup?
Not happening.
Grady Jarrett's a fifth-round pick. But look at what he did on the biggest stage. Those are the types of things you want to see from the youth movement on rosters, where you can say, hey, you know what? I could plug that guy in. It's not overwhelming. Stage is not too big. He sticks to his fundamentals. He goes out. He wins the battles from an X's and O's standpoint. And Jarrett, I think, is one guy that I'm going to bring up. It's still a small sample size, but a player that, hey, they needed him to deliver when Beasley wasn't having his typical performance. And look at what he did.
By the way, in the playoffs leading into the Super Bowl last night, Beasley did nothing.
He was quiet.
For all he did during the regular season, he disappeared in the two playoff games, which is one of the reasons why all last week when people kept telling me, oh, you know, Beasley's going to have a feast against Tom Brady, can't wait to see it. I was like, are you kidding me? What has Beasley proven, especially the last couple of weeks during the course of the postseason? What has he done that made you think he was going to wreck Tom Brady? He didn't do it.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat as well. We're going to get back to your phone calls here in a second. I do want to throw out a few tweets that are relevant to the conversation that we're happening, here's one in terms of what a Giants fan learned from watching the outcome of last night's Super Bowl. Kevin at KMF2332. After Super Bowl 51, he writes, I'm appreciating Coughlin, Eli, and the Giants so much more. Teams get scared and choke when the game gets tight against New England, not the New York Giants. Don't know if that's necessarily a consistent trend for everybody against New England, but the point is the Giants, what has at least jumped out in those two performances is even when Brady put New England ahead, the Giants didn't miss a beat when they had a last opportunity.
Well, let's put it this way. We opened up the show by talking about the three things that happened: the execution, the coaching, and the luck. Giants had all three of those things happen in the final moments of two Super Bowl wins against New England. If any one of those three were not there in those two games, they wouldn't have won. But all three were there twice. And that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here. We've got Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Len.
Doing all right, Len.
Yeah. Hey, great 5 hours, 6 hours of television yesterday with the game, the halftime show, the post game. Yeah, really, really, really a great show. And I am indeed actually glad the Super Bowl's over. We can start looking forward to it. It's to next year. It's 3 weeks early, but I'm going to say we're into this year, which is 2017, now that we got past the Super Bowl. And actually can't wait for the start of the season. You know, I just don't understand how the Falcons lost that game. I thought after the Jones catch, the game was over. I thought that was it. You run the ball a couple of times, take your time getting to the line of scrimmage. I thought the Falcons were kind of rushing it a little bit, trying to get to the line of scrimmage. I kept thinking, geez, use some clock. I was rooting for the Falcons. Use some clock. It just seemed to get away from him. Kind of a shame. But, hey, listen, all the credit in the world to Brady and the Patriots. I hate to say it. I'm grinding my teeth when I say it. But
it's a fact, Len. You can't ignore it.
You know, really a great day. Listen, thanks for mentioning the play that Browner made a couple of years ago in helping Butler get to that ball because – you know, very often overlooked. That was a terrific play by Browner.
I agree with you, Lena, and that's why I keep bringing it up, because everybody talks about Malcolm Butler.
Yeah.
Great play by Malcolm Butler, but if you study that play, what Browner did to set it up, if he doesn't do that,
that's right,
changes the course of the route.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. Listen, who
Len,
was the most
you know what, real quickly.
Did Brady get it?
Yes, Brady did get MVP.
Well deserved. I should have been able to guess that one. Although they had a couple of other heroes. White had a terrific game.
James White, Danny Amendola made a number of big plays.
2-7.
He spread the wealth. Yeah,
he really did. He really spread it around. Really, really a terrific effort. Listen, a couple of questions on the Giants here. Since we're past the Super Bowl now, is it safe to assume and start thinking that the coaching staff is what it is? No changes. I'm not just talking about the head guy. Obviously, that's obvious. But what about the assistant coaches? Can we assume that 19, 20 guys are coming back?
To this point, Len, I have not heard any rumblings from within this building that anybody is leaving been asked to leave or is under consideration to leave. Now, that does not mean it will not happen.
Right,
I'm only
right.
telling you, I have not heard any winds of those feelings at all. So I'm inclined to answer you that they're going to all stay. But
I
can't say 100%.
I mean, the other way to look at it, Len.
Go way back. Jeez, I'm thinking Merritt and Quinn. They go back to early Tom Coughlin.
And by the way, there was an award given out also this weekend. We did not mention, and it speaks to your point. Steve Spagnuolo was, I think he finished, was it fourth in the number one assistant coach of the year?
Well, the one that Kyle Shanahan won?
Yes.
I did not see the final vote. I know Shanahan won it.
I believe Spags was fourth.
Try to see if we can look
that up. Coach of the year voting, which was pretty cool, too.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, very good. Yeah. And some of the guys, you know, the longevity, again, Merritt and Quinn have been around for quite a long time. Of course, Spagnuolo's got, you know, the couple of years that he had in St. Louis and so forth, but... yeah, I'm glad they're all coming back. I think they did a great job. They seem to work together, you know, quite well. And I hope you're right, Paul, that it's, you know, pretty much going to be what it is. You know, on the award, just to get, if I can take another 30 seconds or so, I think you guys have heard me say this before, you know, Collins versus Khalil Mack. I think the awards come based upon what you do in the second half of the season. Not that Collins didn't have a good second half, but, you know, the flashy plays, you know, the London play, et cetera, you know, you're really looking at the first half of the season. And I think most of those sacks that you talked about with Mack, where he had went seven games in a row.
Eight straight, yeah.
I think that came toward the end. It seems to me people get swayed in their voting based upon what's happened most recently, not looking back 17 weeks as to. You know,
well, Len, it's an award.
So Collins had a great year. I'm not knocking
Len,
it. He was solid in the second half. He probably didn't stand out interception-wise like he did the first part of the season.
Well, I don't think there's a coach in the league that wouldn't have wanted any one of those three players on his roster. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I agree. It just thinks that it gets swayed that way toward the, you know, what have you done for me recently kind of thing when it comes to those awards at the, when it comes to those awards at the end of the year.
I mean, I'll say this, and Bob Papa makes a good point. And I was talking to Bobby about this with about a month left in the season, and he was talking to me about Jackrabbit. But the point is well taken. He said, you know what? Jackrabbit's going to be all pro. And I said, well, Bob, I agree with you in terms of the caliber of his play, but I don't know if he's going to get as much recognition outside of New York. I mean, we see him every day, and we really know it. And he said, yeah, but Paulie Dott, look what he did in the nationally televised games.
Yeah,
he was phenomenal in the nationally televised games. And I think that probably has more of an impact than anything else does in terms of these votes that starts coming in league-wide.
Yeah, right.
And so I don't know how many nationally televised games Mack did or what he did in those games, but Bobby made a great point at how, you know, for instance, the games against Dez, which went out, it was a Sunday doubleheader, and it was a primetime game, and he shut down Dez. And Bobby was saying, Paulie Dott, that's going to be big, and he was right.
Yeah. Yes.
No, that's a good point. Yes. I mean, if you look
and
at what you do on the national stage, because the national media votes for these. It's not just Giants beat writers or whatever it may be. Yeah.
Right. He did some things in the defensive backfield, Paul. I mean, I can't remember a Giants D-back making the kinds of plays that he made, you know, 20 years, 25 years. Janoris Jenkins was really terrific.
He was phenomenal.
Just a terrific pickup. And listen, I think we ought to put Ernie Accorsi in the Ring of Honor a second time. Thank God for that trade. What a guy. What an employee. The Giants are really lucky to have Eli to be part of that organization. And we're really lucky as fans. A really just a good guy and a terrific player. Again, thank you, Ernie. As a Giant fan, I appreciate that trade more than ever. Hey, thanks, guys. On to 2017. I'm not looking back. I'm looking forward from here on.
Sounds good,
guys.
Len. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. So Kyle Shanahan won the AP Assistant Coach of the Year. I don't have the final vote. I know he beat out Cowboys defensive coordinator Rod Marinelli by 3, but this article that I'm reading says 10 assistants drew votes. So Spags was one of them. I just don't know how many votes Spags got.
I guarantee you he was in the top five. I think he finished fourth.
But, well, there were a number of worthy assistants this season. I mean, I'll throw out, I don't know if he got votes, but I would have given even Romeo Crennel, the Texans defensive coordinator, losing J.J. Watt, and to see what that defense accomplished. Spags, based on how the Giants defense turned things around. So there were a lot of good candidates on the assistant coaching
level. Let me make something very clear, though. I still think that the year before, the 2015 season, Spags did an even better job with a whole lot less to work with to keep those games close and to have the Giants, you know, in a bunch of nail-biters, which, to be honest, looking at that defensive roster, they did not belong in those games. And Spags was phenomenal, which is why I kept saying all offseason, boy, I hope they don't lose him because he is too good at what he does, and everybody got to see that even more this year.
No, I think that's a very good point, especially if you look at the roster last year versus the roster this year and how they got so much out of that group. I think it says a lot about the coaching staff, Tom Coughlin as well, when you take into consideration the 2015 season. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. Let's take a look at some other tweets. I know a number of people were weighing in on the conversation on a variety of different fronts. In terms of we threw out with respect to NFL honors, Super Bowl 51, assistant coaches, and so forth. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3, he says he did not watch the game yesterday. Wow. I don't know if I've ever heard somebody admit that they didn't watch the Super Bowl.
Really?
Yes, he just wrote that. But he says Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, the greatest quarterback head coach tandem in NFL history.
How do you dispute it? I mean, can anybody really give you a good argument against it other than Chuck Knoll, Terry Bradshaw? Where else do you go? You know? Because even Walsh split his time. He had Montana, you know, for a little bit
Steve
of time.
Young.
But, you know, and then of course, there was Seifert and Mariucci, who then had, you know, the rest of the Niner dynasty, so to speak. Jimmy Johnson had Aikman for a while, but then Switzer came in.
But not nearly as many appearances as Brady and
Belichick.
Forget the wins, just the appearances. Getting there is an accomplishment.
You know, Marv Levy and Jim Kelly?
Well, I mean, that's not a bad one to put up there, considering they did it four straight years.
There are guys in the conversation, but I don't think anybody overtakes the Belichick-Brady combo.
Yes. Well, our producer, Matt, write down in the document.
That's the point, the best combo. I mean, Lombardi bought Starr. You want to throw that out there, too? You know, that's fine. Yeah. They're in the conversation.
Well, you have to consider it that they did it simultaneously. Of course, you could take a head coach that has a lot more on the resume before he arrived at that team. But I think you have to look at it, what they did together, not what they did
Shula
separately.
Greasy? Nobody's going to beat these two.
I agree. I think that it's very difficult to make a case beyond that duo at this point. When you look at the resume and you look at, you know, I always bring up appearances is something that you need to give credit to, especially in a league plagued by injuries and parity. I mean, how can you just dismiss seven appearances?
You know, we're
with the two of them
combined? We're a giant show here, so I'm not trying to be funny, but I have great respect for Jim Kelly, Marv Levy, and that Buffalo Bills team.
I think they're, and I have no problem saying this, I think that Bills team is the most underappreciated team in NFL history.
How about Bud Grant and Fran Tarkenton?
You're going a little bit before me. I'm not
going to
lie.
But, so, I mean, Tarkenton went to three Super Bowls with the Vikings, lost all three, but...
Well, but Buffalo did it and 4 years
in a row,
though.
I mean, when you're talking about at least being in the conversation, you know, the Vikings were perennial playoff teams, perennial Super Bowl contender with Grant and Tarkenton. These are all people you could talk about, but guess what? They're living down the block. Brady and Belichick have the mansion on the corner.
Yeah. Well, they have the hardware. They have the victories to go with that. So that obviously adds a little bit more to their case and so forth. But I think it's fair to say it was quite a Super Bowl to cap off an eventful 2016 season, both for the New York Giants as well as for the rest of the league. And, you know, like the Giants can learn from previous Super Bowls, you see what the two teams that made it were composed of, the personnel, the balance, and these are the things that the Giants are going to be striving for throughout the course of the offseason. But it's also important to note that even though the offseason now officially will start, We are here for the entire length of the offseason. Giants programming Big Blue Kickoff Live does not disappear. Next up will be the Combine. That'll be the big focus. You know, yes. Then we'll have free agency. But free agency is the first hurdle. When you're speculating about roster moves, you got to get through free agency first before you start really getting into what direction the team should go in the draft, because free agency is going to dictate, perhaps from a need basis, where they go in the draft. So we first have to see what happens with free agency.
And I want to mention this now because I just put it into my new phone this past week that I got. NFL tags, March 1st, okay, deadline for NFL tags, and March 9th, is the actual time you can begin starting to sign
but there's that first three-day window or so where you
can talk. To guys.
Correct. Yes.
So jot those down, because before you know it, they're going to be here.
Yeah, because we're talking about essentially less than a month that you have to survive before we get more and more football news and more items to analyze. But we'll continue to digest the Super Bowl the remainder of the week and continue to look ahead to what should be obviously a very busy offseason, not just for the Giants, but the entire NFL landscape. We appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets over the last hour. We'll try to address anything we did not get to on the air, off the air. But for Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com.